Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It's Monday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I am your host, Catholic apologist and speaker Trent Horn. And to continue our project of expanding the Council of Trent to being a daily podcast instead of just a weekly one, we've got different shows for different days. I hope you guys have been enjoying Free for All Fridays and stepping in on Workshop Wednesday. Today is Meet Them Monday. I just made that up at the top of my head because I needed something that starts with the letter M for Monday's interviews with some of the brightest Catholics and non-Catholics around on important issues related to your faith, how to explain it, how to defend it. Today, we have the author of The Contraception Deception. And who better to speak with us about a modern-day deception than someone who made a life deceiving others on stage, pulling rabbits from hats and finding cards located that he could not possibly have known. Deception, though, where everyone is in on it, which is okay. It makes it stage magic and not just lying. We have with us Patrick Coffin. He holds graduate degrees in philosophy and theology from McGill University in Montreal and the Franciscan University of Steubenville. He has conducted hundreds of interviews with top leaders around the world, including Vatican cardinals like Raymond Cardinal Burke, George Cardinal Pell, and Francis Cardinal Arinze. He is the former host of Catholic Answers Live and the current host of the Patrick Coffin Show, and I assume the emperor of Coffin Nation, the king of Coffin Nation, the ruler of that domicile, which you all will probably hear about more. And if you're a premium subscriber, sit in on a little chat between Patrick and I about that. But now, for our Meet Them Monday, let us meet Patrick Coffin and talk about the contraception deception. Patrick, welcome to the Council of Trent.
Trent, happy to receive your counsel and exchange ideas. I thought you were going to go for Mordant Monday. I was hoping for Mordant Monday. I don't even know what mordant means, but I thought if he says mordant, I'm going to do a Snoopy dance or something. But meet them is fine. So nice to meet you again.
Mordant.
Yeah,
someone,
maybe Nick, the Grand Poobah, super fast researcher, can look that up. Okay. M-O-R-D-A-N-T, Mordant.
D-A-N-T?
It's probably something.
Because M-O-R-D-E-N-T is a rapid alteration of a note with the note immediately above, below, or above it in a musical scale. So
okay. That
is a mordent. A mordant would be having a sharp or critical quality, a biting sense of humor. So let us munch into some important subjects today.
Then. We'll trog on ahead. Thanks for having me on, Trent. It's fun to be here in your space.
Oh, I'm glad to be able to have you on, and it's nice to be speaking with you here in the Catholic Answers studio where we film the Council of Trent podcast. It makes me nostalgic for old times, though. Actually, when nostalgia—I don't know if you knew this—when nostalgia was first mentioned in literary records, it was considered a kind of disease. And in fact, soldiers who were diagnosed with having nostalgia were executed or abandoned. They were considered a liability to the troops.
Wow. So, I guess they wouldn't allow blues music in the barracks either.
Oh, no, they hate, like soldiers would start weeping when they would whistle songs from back home and stuff, and the generals just got kind of fed up with that. But so hopefully Chris Check won't come up in here and penalize me for my nostalgic thoughts about our time together. But today, what I wanted to talk to you about and share with our listeners is a book you have. It's actually a revised version of a previous book you wrote on the issue of contraception, called The Contraception Deception, Catholic Teaching on Birth Control. What is the core thesis of the book, and what motivated you to do a second edition?
Terrific questions. Core thesis of the book is that the insight that love and life belong together, or put a different way, sex and babies are organically and ontologically united. That insight is found not only in sacred scripture and sacred tradition, but it's also available to the human mind if you're open to what the church has to say about the natural moral law. People as widely divergent as Jordan B. Peterson, whom I've interviewed four times, Raquel Welch, the ultimate sex symbol of the 60s and 70s, Sigmund Freud, the Jewish father of psychoanalysis, Mahatma Gandhi, all these non-Catholics have agreed, at least seen the contraceptive mentality and the movement that it spawned as something deeply disruptive to the relationship between men and women. So what Pope Paul VI articulated famously in 1968 with his encyclical Humanae Vitae has been around for a long, long time. It actually predates Christianity. In fact, the Bible verses that a previous pope cites, that would be Pius XI in Casti Canubii on December 31st, 1930, he cites the famous Onan episode in Genesis chapter 38. And so this is a long established teaching that you can't disrupt or sterilize what God has made fertile in the sex act. Mm-hmm. Now, the second part of your question, why did I revise and expand A Sex au Naturel, the first edition of the book? That's a very good question. I decided to revisit all the themes of the book 8 years later, because the year that it came out, after the paper was cooled and it was on the shelves, we had a little thing called the HHS mandate, sometimes called the birth control mandate.
Right.
And all of a sudden, everybody's talking about lawsuits that have to do with birth control. Also, there have been some assistive reproductive technologies improvements, or finesses, I should say, in the last 8 years. So I wanted to give the whole book another kind of update and advance the central argument to include things like Obergefell-Hodges, the Supreme Court decision from 2015 that redefined marriage, and also the transgender mania that is now upon us, like tsunami after tsunami.
Right.
I believe all of it, Trent, stems from dissent from that encyclical. If you believe that love and life can be separated, if sex can be shorn from conception, the logic involved there is inexorable, and you can't argue against what's going to come. And we always, Catholic apologists love to say, Pope Paul VI was really a prophet in what he predicted. Well, I say he was wrong insofar as he didn't go far enough. I mean, he couldn't have predicted everything. But the calamities that have befallen the culture and families and individuals is actually worse than he predicted. So that's a longer-winded way of answering your question. I hope it was a help.
Oh, no, I think that's helpful. And just on a personal note, I prefer the title, actually, of your second edition, The Contraception Deception. I think it gets right to the point. The previous one made me think that it was actually more of like a book of cocktail recipes. Like, I think I'd like a sex, can I have a Manhattan? We're all out. I'll take a Sex au Naturel.
Sex au Naturel on the beach. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think the first title was Too Clever by Half. Yeah, I agree. I think the contraception deception kind of gets at it. And also in the subtitle, Trent, Catholic Teaching on Birth Control, I take some pains in the introduction to explain that the church does not officially use the term birth control. And I do it as a sort of shorthand.
Right.
And the reason is, the enemies of the teaching will sometimes throw up an objection, and they'll say, well, wait a second, aren't you controlling your birth by abstaining on days you believe are fertile when you use natural family planning? And so then you get bogged down into a semantics argument. But the second, I think the main reason why the magisterium does not use the phrase birth control is that the phrase was coined by Margaret Sanger in the early 20s.
Right.
The birth control lig is the forerunner to what we call Planned Parenthood today. So, but for shorthand, it's hard to avoid saying it.
Right, because though we wouldn't necessarily use those terms, I mean, the Catechism talks about responsible procreation, that Catholics practice birth control in the sense that we space and plan our births. Our births are very controlled. Many, even people who practice home birth, it's not like you just wake up like, oh, you're going into labor here at the house. Oh, I better clean this up. Like we just don't believe birth is some kind of an uncontrolled random thing we don't think about. We certainly do control, plan, understand it, prepare for it. You know, we just don't contracept or sterilize the sexual act. So I think that's, an important point to bring across there. I want to quote, just popped in my mind, I found the article here. This is from a radical feminist, E.J. Graff, talking about, this was written several years ago before so-called same-sex marriage became legal. And I like in your book that you show these connections between abandoning humana vitae and the radical social transformations that have taken place. This is what Graff wrote many years before. She was campaigning for marriage to be redefined. And she writes, if same-sex marriage becomes legal, that venerable institution will stand for sexual choice, for cutting the link between sex and diapers. Ah, but it already does. Formally, U.S. marriage hasn't been justified solely by reproduction since 1965, when the Supreme Court batted down the last laws forbidding birth control sale to married couples. So even people on the other side, they see this, and that's the article is same-sex marriage is a radical feminist idea. E.J. Graff, what say you?
Yeah, well, there's another example of someone outside the dogmatic Catholic fold who has eyes to see, and she's making causal connections there that many people inside the church don't make. I think she's absolutely right. You mentioned planned responsible parenthood mm-hmm. earlier. It's the common English translation of Humana Vitae. Mm-hmm. Janet Smith has done her own Latin text translation of Humana Vitae, mm-hmm. and she believes that more faithful to the original Latin is the phrase conscious parenthood, and that comes from the writing of Carol Wojtyła, later St. John Paul II, in Love and Responsibility. Now, it's very similar, but conscious parenthood gets at the idea of intentionality, and you have that key conversation each month when you're not using contraception, because think of it, your sex life is like you're playing with fire. We could create a person who will never stop existing here.
Right.
And so the intentionality, the consciousness that you are living out this wonderful rhythm between fertile and infertile, it's very much tied to nature. And it's always, I found it interesting, Trent, that the feminist movement and all the, the pro-green organic movement people have not understood or jumped on this bandwagon, so to speak, of the naturalness of NFP. It's natural family planning. There's no chemicals, there's no deposits, there's no intrusive rubber items. You know what I mean? And it works with the rhythm of the environment we call the female body.
What amazes me, Patrick, is even people who believe in making tremendous sacrifices in their own personal life for their own personal health, like saying, well, I'm going to be vegan. I'm not even going to wear a leather belt. I'm not even going to be within 500 yards of a Denny's. You make mm-hmm. these amazing big personal sacrifices in the name of your diet or the clothes you wear or the money you'll spend for certain causes. And yet, when it comes to planning and spacing children, there's this idea that it's like almost that like contraceptives are like some kind of holy object. And so you don't want to like blaspheme them, defame them, or put anything else in their place, kind of like they're an essential element for many of these people for like the particular worldviews they have. It is a very strange thing that we observe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And if another thing that's observable, if you've read a little bit about the origins of the Protestant revolt or Reformation, is that mm-hmm. all of those first generation reformers, so-called, from Martin Luther to Zwingli to Knox, mm-hmm. John Calvin, they use language against what we call birth control, using much more vehement, kind of thunderous words than any Catholic pope did. Mm-hmm. So all of Christianity were lockstep with us until the summer of 1930,
right,
when the Anglican Church, with their Lambeth Conference decision, overturned all previous Lambeth Conferences, by the way, by allowing one little loophole only for marriage, only for extraordinary circumstances. And that loophole led within 10 or 15 years to a complete collapsing of old line, mainline Protestantism on this question.
Well, what do you think has happened, just in your opinion, as to why, there is a time that nearly all reasonable people could see love and babies, sex and babies are united. There's an organic link. Love and life have this connection we shouldn't sever, that almost everybody can just see it and it seems obvious. Whereas nowadays, for many, many people, if not the majority of people, it's mm-hmm. obvious to them that they're not connected in any way. You have women who go to pregnancy resource centers and they have an unintended pregnancy and say things like, I have no idea how this could happen. You have no idea how this could happen. So where do you think the disconnect happened, or what happened?
It's a multi-layered answer, and it would take a long time to say everything that could be said. It's a very good question, Trent. I think part of the confusion surrounding the church's teaching on contraception and chastity in general stems from a loss of faith, a massive global reduction in the idea that a transcendent provident God is behind things, and that our human processes themselves have purposes. And so you've got the rise of things like plastic surgery and body alteration and all manner of metal being stuck in your body. And now we've got a whole tattoo tribe in which the human body is treated almost like a blank slate, something that you can design yourself.
Right. If I don't want to be a man, I can become a woman. basically.
That's sort of that's the terminus point, right? That's the end point. So our bodies are merely instrumental goods that the I, whether I feel that my gender is misbodied or whatever,
right?
That's the more radical extension or kind of, what's the word, apotheosis of what we're talking about. But I think the key is to see that the human body is given to us. Mm-hmm. We weren't assigned a body. We are a body. We're a body and soul composite. And so at the root of the descent of Humana Vitae, I believe one of the major strains here is the movement from stewardship of the body to autocratic control over the body.
Mm-hmm.
So families that are couples that are using natural family planning, they're stewarding their gift of fertility, but they're never thwarting it. They're never doing something else besides their sex life to subtract from it and to kind of sabotage it. And that's the difference between stewardship and autocratic control. Does that make sense?
No, I think that makes perfect sense. So while we still have a few minutes left, let's get down to brass tacks for our listeners who, you know, this stuff comes up all the time. One, on the subject of dissent, I mean, this is something people have been dissenting against ever since 1968. And you'll hear Catholics, people will say, well, I'm a faithful Catholic, but you know, the church could change this teaching on contraception. You know, you don't have to believe it if you don't want to. I mean, there's still a lot of debate and people try to sow a lot of confusion about what the church teaches about contraception and how binding it is. How can people cut through the confusion on that issue?
There is a book I could recommend, Trent.
Do tell us.
The Contraception Deception, Catholic Teaching on Birth Control. I wrote this book for dissenters, for people on the fence, or for faithful Catholics who want some ammo and how to answer objections. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways that people object to it, Trent. Everything from it's changeable and the church can, with the flick of a papal pen, it'll change in the future, to it's just the Pope's opinion, to, well, what about the overpopulation bomb? Mm-hmm. To, you know, this is, there's so many different ways that people escape from the truth.
Right.
But this is not something that's ever going to go away because it's the truth about the human person. And if you read Humana Vitae, it's only 31 paragraphs long.
Yeah.
This is an easy, I won't say an easy read because you have to sort of pay attention, but it's not something that you have to read a big fat theological tome. You don't need a PhD in theology to get through it. And it's really a very gentle love letter,
right,
about what true love is. Human love has qualities. It's total, it's faithful, it's fruitful, and it is fecund.
Right.
And so that's the compressed version, but there's so many different ways of objecting.
Of course. It's hard
to
summarize. Let's narrow on just one thing. I think people,
sure,
you'll often hear people bring up saying, well, why should Catholics believe this when, you know, they'll do surveys like 98% of Catholic women use birth control. So it's like the idea to try to make it seem like, well, why should Catholics even bother, you know, if so many people aren't obeying the teaching? What do you see wrong with that very common kind of argument? It's like usually whenever there's a news story on contraception, it's like the first line in the second paragraph starts with that. Your response.
Right. They're presenting a very good argument against laws against anything. Any popular crime should be decriminalized because everybody's doing it. Mm-hmm. In Scripture, there are many hard sayings. Let's just go to explicit things that Jesus said. A few Sundays ago, we had the John chapter 6 reading. In the second half of John 6, the greatest teacher in the world let all kinds of people leave. He didn't call them back to, you know, rearticulate, hey, guys, wait a second, I didn't really mean literally. So some hard sayings, they're true, and we have to grapple with the truth of them rather than subvert the truth of them to our own desires. How about the teaching against or on behalf of forgiving your enemies, loving those who do good? That's tough. I think maybe 99% of Catholics don't do that regularly.
A recent survey shows 98% of Catholics do not forgive their enemies. Jesus is just totally wrong.
That's like then it becomes an Eye of the Tiber article, right?
Right.
So what people assent to or dissent from is separate from the truth of the teaching of Jesus Christ and the 2,000-year sacred tradition of the church that's faithful to him.
Right.
And the one way to compress it is to say that life comes down to two choices. You subvert desire to truth or truth to desire.
Mm.
Something similar to, if you pray the rosary every day, I mean, if you're trying to grow in holiness, it doesn't have to be the rosary, but if you have a regular intentional time of sitting in the presence of God, invoking his name, sitting in his presence, listening to his word, if you're doing that daily, you're going to sin way less. But if you start sinning, the prayer is going to evaporate. It's really they are at odds with each other.
You don't know too many notorious sinners who do an hour of adoration every day.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
No, and I think that's good. And I think this helps us see that while we need to put forward good arguments for the church's teaching on love and life, and you've got great ones here in your book, I think a lot of what it comes down to is if we're going to evangelize people to accept many of these difficult teachings, they kind of first have to be put in a good spiritual place to accept that by availing themselves of the sacraments, by having an active prayer life. Like, they kind of have to get a lot of that first, and then the truth can kind of enter their hearts when, like, the shields are kind of finally down now.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's true. It's part of the gospel without compromise.
Right.
And Catholics should stop apologizing for it when they do the work of apologetics, because the people who dissent, Trent, they may not know it, but they're built to hear it. They were born to hear the fullness of the truth of the human person and sexual love and marriage and all of the things that God reveals. So I think Catholics, sometimes they know that the person that they're communicating with dissents from it, and it becomes an awkward moment.
Right.
It's good to remember that the Lord wants to act through us. Sometimes we have to kind of get out of the way and realize the teachings of the church represent the truth about the human person. So we don't have to be afraid of it. But I agree with you. First, we have to live it and love it ourselves, and then maybe people will ask us why we're so happy. Why we're so darn happy?
I wrote my book, Why We're Catholic. Maybe the sequel will be, mm-hmm, Why We're So Darn Happy. Damn. Trent Horn. And Patrick Coffin. Mr. Coffin, please do tell us where people can get this book and where they can learn more about you and what you're doing.
Terrific. They can get it on Amazon. They can get it in your local Catholic bookstore. If they contact me through my faith site, which is the .net, patrickcoffin.net, if you ask specifically, I can sign the book and send it off. We ship worldwide. My main website for the podcast and the blog and everything else is patrickcoffin.media. Easy to remember, patrickcoffin.media.
And so if you also go to trenthornpodcast.com, Patrick and I will be chatting a little bit about his new venture, Coffin Nation, which I certainly hope one day that can become patrickcoffin.gov and the United Nations will formally give you a seat, you know, or at least you can be a permanent observer. You can sit there with the Holy Father and, you know, be in there, you know.
Will they let me take off my shoe and bang on the podium?
As long as I think the Russians always get first dib to do that. Then after that, everyone else gets their turn. It's kind of a tradition there. Patrick Coffin, thank you very much for joining us today on the Council of Trent.
Honored to be with you, Trent. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you so much. And for all our listeners, thank you for your continued support. And you can get this episode and other great bonus content at our website at trenthornpodcast.com. Check it out there. Become a premium subscriber for as little as $5 a month. And you can also, if it would be great help, check out at iTunes and Google Play. Leave a little nice review. Helps people learn more about the podcast. Thank you guys so much, and you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.